we would like to send out a special thanks to the fun and challenging Best Fiends, the infamously impossible-to-put-down puzzle game. Download Best Fiends free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Thank you, and enjoy the show. April 6th, 1986. Gallup, New Mexico. The mother of 9-year-old Antoinette Caidito wakes up to discover that her daughter is missing from their home, and she cannot be found anywhere. Antoinette's sister would later claim she was abducted by 2 men after answering the door in the middle of the night, though she would not reveal this information until years later. There are a number of strange developments in the investigation, including a frantic phone call to the police from a girl claiming to be Antoinette, but no conclusive answers about what actually happened to her. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and today we're going to be covering one of my most highly requested missing children's cases, the 1986 disappearance of 9-year-old Antoinette Caidito. Ever since the inception of this podcast, there has been a lot of demand for me to produce an episode about this story, which is a very tragic and controversial one. Antoinette Caidito was discovered to be missing from her home one morning, and her disappearance would receive national attention years later when it was featured on Unsolved Mysteries. Perhaps the most vivid portion of this segment was the recording of a phone call, which I'll play a bit later, that featured audio of a terrified-sounding young girl calling the police and claiming she was Antoinette Caidito before she was interrupted by an angry, unidentified male. While it was never conclusively determined if the caller was Antoinette, additional evidence would eventually surface to suggest that she may have been kidnapped and held captive. One of the reasons this case has become so controversial is because Antoinette's sister would claim she witnessed her abduction, but since she waited several years before sharing this story, there has been skepticism about whether this event actually happened. Furthermore, there has also been speculation that Antoinette's mother may have been involved in her disappearance, or at the very least, knew more information than she revealed. As I'm going to explain later on, this is one case where it's sometimes difficult to separate facts from unconfirmed rumors, but since we recently passed the 35-year anniversary of when Antoinette went missing, I thought now would be an ideal time to finally release an episode. Anyway, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of these sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the disappearance of Antoinette Caidito. Our story begins in 1986 in Gallup, New Mexico, a town which had a population of around 18,000 at this time, a good portion of whom were Native American. Our central figure is 9-year-old Antoinette Caidito, who currently lives in a small house on Arnold Street off US Route 66 with her mother and 2 half-sisters. Antoinette was originally born on Christmas Day in 1976, and is the biracial child of her father, Larry Estrada, and mother, Teresa Caidito, who belongs to the Navajo Nation and goes by the name Penny. Following her separation from Larry, Penny would go on to have two more daughters with another man, 7-year-old Sunita, nicknamed Sadie, and 5-year-old Wendy. Penny is currently raising her daughters as a single mother, and even though Antoinette is only 9 years old, she is considered to be mature for her age, and plays a major role in helping take care of her 2 younger siblings. She is also described as being a very kind and level-headed child who does very well in school and has a strong interest in Bible studies. At around 7 a.m. on the morning of Sunday, April the 6th, Penny woke up and was prepared to take her children to Bible school. The previous evening, Penny had gone out to a bar with friends and left her children in the company of a babysitter until she arrived home at around midnight. After sending the babysitter home, Penny said she let her children continue playing. Even though their house had 4 bedrooms, Penny would often let her daughter sleep inside her own room, and on this particular night, they all stayed up late talking together until they finally went to sleep shortly before 3 a.m. When Penny awoke a few hours later, Wendy and Sadie were still inside her room, but Antoinette could not be found anywhere inside her house. All of Antoinette's clothing and personal items have been left behind, aside from the pink nightgown she had last been seen wearing. Even though Penny was certain that she locked the front door and latched the adjacent screen door before she went to bed, she noticed that these doors were now unlocked and unlatched. While there were no signs of any struggle or forced entry, Penny became concerned enough that she went out and checked with all the neighbors, only to learn that none of them had seen Antoinette or knew where she was. When a search of the surrounding foothills failed to turn up Antoinette, Penny eventually contacted the Gallup Police Department and officially reported her daughter missing. Well, Sadie would soon share an interesting story about how she and Antoinette had been woken up during the night by the sound of knocking at the front door. When Antoinette went to see who it was, Sadie said she heard the sound of a man and woman outside identifying themselves as an aunt and uncle and saying, quote, "Hurry, we're cold out here, open the door." However, because Antoinette did not recognize the man standing outside, she refused to let them in and returned to the bedroom. According to Sadie, she soon heard someone knocking on the front door a second time, and while she saw Antoinette leave to go see who it was, Sadie remained in bed and quickly fell asleep again. She could not be certain if Antoinette actually answered the door, but her family maintained that she would not have opened it for anyone she did not know. Nevertheless, the police were concerned that Antoinette may have been the victim of a kidnapping, and agents from the FBI's Albuquerque field office would eventually be brought in to assist with the investigation. The only potential lead was provided by a neighbor who reported seeing an older model brown truck with New Mexico license plates parked outside the Cayadito residence between 6:30 and 7 a.m. that same morning. The neighbor said a man got out of the truck and walked towards the residence, but they didn't get a good enough look at the man or the truck to provide much of a description, and Penny said that her family did not know anyone who owned a brown truck. In June of that year, a 62-year-old local man named Wesley Daniels was arrested and charged with 12 felony sex crimes as he had abused a total of 4 boys between the ages of 9 and 11 while taking them out on picnics. Daniels was reportedly seen in Antoinette's neighborhood on the day she disappeared, but nothing could be found to link him to the case. The investigation remained at a standstill until the following year when an unexpected development occurred on April the 12th, 1987. That day, a dispatcher at the Gallup Police Department received a frantic phone call from a frightened-sounding young girl who repeatedly said that her name was Antoinette Cayadito and that she was calling from Albuquerque. The dispatcher tried to ask the girl for more details until she was interrupted by the sound of an angry, unidentified man who yelled, "Who said you could use the phone?" The girl immediately let out a scream, and some scuffling could be heard before the call abruptly cut off. Here is the original audio.
Police Department. Hello. I'm Antoinette Cayadito.
Okay, whereabouts in Albuquerque?
You said you could use a phone.
Hello? Antoinette, where are you? Antoinette? Hello?
Since the call only lasted for a total of 40 seconds, there was no opportunity to trace it. I should note that the audio clip you just heard was just over 20 seconds, but it's been reported that the original recording contained the sound of another voice in the background. This voice possibly belonged to an elderly person, and they could be heard asking who was on the line while the man yells at the crying girl. When investigators played a recording of the call for Penny, she was pretty certain that the girl's voice was Antoinette. She believed that the way the girl pronounced her name sounded exactly like her daughter, but Penny claimed she did not recognize the man's voice. In January of 1989, audio of the recording would be played over some local radio stations in hopes that someone would recognize the voices, but this did not lead to any answers. The next significant development took place in 1991, when a waitress from a diner in Carson City, Nevada, came forward and claimed she had served a teenage girl matching Antoinette's description, who was in the company of a man and woman that the waitress described as unkempt. By this point, 5 years had passed since Antoinette's disappearance, and she would have been 14 years old, but the FBI had recently released a pair of computer-enhanced photographs to show what Antoinette might look like at that age, and the waitress was certain that the girl she saw was her. According to the waitress, the girl knocked her fork on the floor, and when the waitress picked it up, the girl inexplicably grabbed her hand and squeezed it tightly. After the girl and her two companions left, the waitress went back to clean the table and found a napkin underneath the girl's plate which had the words "Help me" and "Call the police" written on it. This sighting compelled Marty Escabel, the lead detective for the Gallup PD, as well as an FBI agent named Kevin Miles, to re-interview people connected to the case, so they decided to speak with Antoinette's youngest sister, Wendy, who was now 10 years old. To their surprise, Wendy suddenly shared a story about having personally witnessed Antoinette's abduction. She claimed that during the early morning hours of April the 6th, 1986, there was a knock at the front door, and when Antoinette went to answer it and asked who it was, a man replied that it was her Uncle Joe. This prompted Antoinette to open the door, but Wendy said she saw two men grab her sister and force her into a brown van which was parked in front of the house before driving away. Wendy maintained that she did not get a clear enough look at the two men to recognize their faces, and when asked why she did not share this story 5 years earlier, Wendy replied that her mother was crying and very upset at the time, so she was worried that no one would believe her story and she would get into trouble. Well, Antoinette did in fact have an Uncle Joe who was married to Penny's sister back in 1986, but after interviewing him, investigators learned that he had an alibi on the night Antoinette went missing, along with a witness to corroborate it, so he was not considered to be a suspect in her disappearance. In spite of this, investigators theorized that these abductors may have known that Antoinette had an Uncle Joe and used this as a ruse to convince her to open the door. Following this new revelation, the case would be featured on an episode of Unsolved Mysteries, which aired on December the 23rd, 1992, 2 days before what would have been Antoinette's 16th birthday. The segment showed Penny paying a visit to a Navajo medicine woman who held a traditional centuries-old Navajo ceremony called the Crystal Ritual, in which she attempted to make contact with Antoinette's spirit. According to the medicine woman, Antoinette was still alive and being held against her will under threat of violence somewhere in the southwest United States, and may have had a child by that point. In spite of this case's newfound exposure on national television, the investigation continued to hit a brick wall. Penny spent many years struggling with alcoholism, and even had to be institutionalized a few times, and on April the 18th, 1999, she passed away at the age of 46 due to cirrhosis of the liver and cardiac issues. By this point, the authorities had built up suspicion towards Penny because she had once failed a polygraph, and the FBI had planned to re-interview her on her deathbed, but she passed away before they could do so. In a 2010 article published in the Gallup Herald, the former lead detective, Marty Escabel, who had since left the Gallup Police Department, publicly expressed his suspicions about Penny for the first time, stating, quote, "I'm pretty confident Penny had knowledge of who took Antoinette, based on her failing a polygraph test administered by the FBI," end quote. Well, in 2016, the Albuquerque Journal ran an extensive 30th anniversary article about Antoinette's disappearance, and Wendy agreed to speak about the case. Wendy was now living in Bakersfield, California with her husband and 5 children, and was very open about the personal struggle she endured following her sister's disappearance. She claimed that she could never talk to her mother about Antoinette without crying, and things reached the point where they were unable to speak about her at all, unless they got high or drunk to numb the pain. Wendy said she was plagued with guilt over not having immediately said something about witnessing her sister's abduction, so she went on to live a self-destructive lifestyle of drug addiction, alcoholism, and criminal activity, which included affiliating herself with a gang. At one point, Wendy told her mother that she believed she might be pregnant with her first child, and they planned to have a discussion about this after she took a pregnancy test. But in a tragic turn of events, Penny wound up passing away on the very same day Wendy got the results back, which confirmed she was pregnant. After Wendy had children, the state wound up taking them away from her, and it was not until 2007 when she finally went into rehab and started down the path of cleaning herself up and reconnecting with her kids. By the time she was interviewed years later, Wendy said she was living a happy and productive life, but admitted that her memories of Antoinette were vague, and she could not offer much insight into her disappearance. The Albuquerque Journal article also mentioned that Wendy was estranged from her other sister, Sadie, who, as far as I can tell, has never spoken publicly about the case. While the FBI closed their investigation in 2006, it continues to remain an open investigation with the Gallup Police Department. But after 35 years, the actual circumstances of what happened to Antoinette Cayadito remain unknown. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. But before we continue, I would like to take a few moments to talk about our sponsor, Best Fiends. I still remember how a while back, I found myself searching for a matching puzzle game that could give me a good challenge. A game that had a lot of variety to it, not one in which you had to use the same basic strategy every single round. For the longest time, this felt like a quest to find the Holy Grail, and I wasn't sure I'd ever find what I was looking for, but then, Best Fiends entered my life. This is a mobile puzzle game that always leaves your brain feeling refreshingly challenged, as if it swam a few laps in the pool or took a bike ride around the block. In fact, it gave my brain the same level of challenge as when I pieced together a podcast script about an unsolved mystery. Best Fiends is definitely way more fun than other matching challenge games, like the ones where all you do is smash candy over and over. It's always been so much fun that I just can't stop playing, which would explain why I recently passed level 1500. This is what happens when there are literally thousands of fun puzzles to solve, and even after playing for over a year and a half, there are still many more puzzles that I haven't even touched yet. One of the top features of Best Fiends is the constant updates, which always give you something new to explore, and getting to play the game with so many colorful, cute characters is fun too. Once you start playing, you'll agree with me that it's doubtful one will ever find a puzzle game with more to offer, and I don't want you folks blaming me if you can't put it down. So download Best Fiends free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Give it a try. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of the episode. So I'm sure many of you first became familiar with this case after seeing it on Unsolved Mysteries, and the most vivid portion of the segment is hearing the recording of the phone call to the Gallup Police Department. While it's never been conclusively determined if the girl on the call was Antoinette Cayadito, she still sounds pretty terrified, so the idea of hearing actual audio of a kidnapped girl struggling with her captor is quite disturbing. When I first watched the segment, I had no reason to believe that Antoinette's mother, Penny Cayadito, might be involved in her disappearance, because on the basis of her interviews, she comes across as a sincere person who only wants to find out what happened to her daughter. But Penny would pass away less than 6 years after the episode originally aired, and it seems like a lot of suspicion about her has risen to the surface during the past 2 decades. The lead detective, Marty Esquivel, was also interviewed during the Unsolved Mystery segment, and never gave any indication that he suspected Penny, but he has since revealed his belief that at the very least, Penny had knowledge of who abducted Antoinette, and if true, she took that secret to her grave. Indeed, while the segment doesn't directly point any fingers at the family, it's hard not to feel that something was off about Wendy's story about having witnessed Antoinette answer the front door and get abducted by two men. Even putting aside the issue that Wendy didn't come forward with this information for 5 years, why would a 9-year-old girl even be answering the front door in the middle of the night? We'll talk more about Wendy's story a little later, but I want to make mention of an article which was published in the December 13, 1987 edition of the Albuquerque Journal. It contained comments from a Gallup police detective named Amos Hinshaw, who confirmed that no one had yet been ruled out as a suspect, including family members, and he stated, quote, "My gut feeling is that some family members may not be telling us all they know," end quote. Hinshaw mentioned that police originally did not know that a number of people had been in and out of the Cayadito residence on the night of Antoinette's disappearance. He makes it sound like the police had gathered up pieces of information during the investigation, which would be confirmed by the family, even though the family probably could have expedited things by providing this info themselves in the first place. While Hinshaw never flat out accuses the family of any complicity, you sense that he's planting the seeds to suggest that this case might be something more than a simple stranger abduction. I mentioned during the intro that one of the biggest issues with researching this story is that it can sometimes be difficult to separate fact from unconfirmed rumor, and there's a lot of contradictory information out there. For instance, there's even confusion about the identity of Antoinette's biological father. I'm pretty certain that her father is Larry Estrada, as there are a number of newspaper articles which confirm that fact, but for some reason, Antoinette's Wikipedia page says that her father was a man named Anthony Montoya, who passed away in 2012. But I'm pretty certain that Anthony is actually the biological father of Antoinette's half-sisters, Sadie and Wendy, as Montoya was the surname Wendy was using when she was interviewed by the Albuquerque Journal in 2016. I think the confusion has been compounded by the fact that at least one newspaper article referred to Larry Estrada as Antoinette's stepfather, but since Larry was actually married to another woman at the time Antoinette went missing, I'm pretty certain this is not true. Whatever the case, it sounds like Larry still played a role in Antoinette's life, as he would often stop by the family's residence to check on the family, and he participated in the search effort and spoke to the media when she vanished. However, there's a bizarre side story involving Larry, which may or may not have a connection to this case. On September the 5th, 1989, Larry's 25-year-old sister, Louisa Estrada, who technically would have been Antoinette's paternal aunt, also went missing from Gallup, but literally the only source I could find for this was a newspaper article published in the Albuquerque Journal 4 weeks later. The only details available were that Louisa was mentally handicapped and had the mind of a young child, and she was last seen in a park outside a Catholic church with an unidentified man in his late 20s. Since that's all the information I have, and there's no listing for Louisa Estrada in any of the missing persons databases out there, I have no idea if she was ever found. The aforementioned Albuquerque Journal article did make mention of the familial connection between Louisa and Antoinette, but while there's nothing to suggest these disappearances are linked, that's still a pretty bizarre coincidence. It's been reported that both Penny and Larry were rumored to be involved in drugs at the time Antoinette went missing, so if this meant they associated themselves with shady characters, I can see how it might be inferred that one of these characters could have been responsible for her disappearance. While we're on the subject of rumors, it's no big secret that Penny had struggles with drugs and alcohol, which likely played a role in her passing away at the relatively young age of 46. I'm sure these issues were exacerbated by the grief of losing Antoinette, but it's not entirely clear to me if she already struggled with addiction before her daughter went missing. The one rumor which has always floated around in this case, which paints Penny in a very suspicious light, is that she supposedly purchased an expensive new sports car the week after Antoinette's disappearance. Now, the family lived in the town's most low-income housing area and always struggled with poverty, so obviously, it would look pretty odd if Penny suddenly came into enough money to buy a new car. For this reason, there have always been rumors that Penny could have sold her daughter into human trafficking. But the problem is that while this story about the new car is frequently shared on true crime forums, message boards, and blogs, I have never seen it confirmed by any official news source. I'm not entirely sure where it originated from, but I have seen it mentioned in places like the Web Sleuths forum and the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum by posters who claim to have inside knowledge of the case. I'm not trying to say this story about the car isn't true, as it very well could be, but it's just never been corroborated, even though Penny has been deceased for over 20 years. Look, I'm definitely not going to try and say that Penny was Mother of the Year, as even if she had no involvement in Antoinette's disappearance, her own account of the events which took place that night is problematic. Penny's story is that she returned home from the bar sometime around midnight and let her kids stay up chatting with her until just before 3 a.m., even though they had to get up at 7 a.m. for Bible school. These kids were 9, 7, and 5 years old respectively, so it definitely seems odd that Penny would allow them to stay up that late and then wake them up after only 4 hours of sleep. It does sound like Antoinette was pretty mature for her age, and as the oldest child in the family, she had to bear a lot of responsibility for helping take care of her younger, as Wendy even confirmed that Antoinette would often cook for them and iron their clothing. But was this a result of Penny being an irresponsible mother who was heavily involved in alcohol and drugs? Or was Penny just overwhelmed by single-handedly having to raise 3 kids in poverty and required Antoinette's assistance? It's also interesting how Penny supposedly left her kids in the company of a babysitter until she arrived home, yet none of the sources out there provide any details about this babysitter or any indication of how thoroughly they were questioned by police. We also have the one comment from Detective Hinshaw in the aforementioned Albuquerque Journal article about how people were going in and out of the Cayadito residence throughout the night, but he never expanded upon this. Were these people there before or after Penny came home? Did anybody stop by during the 3-hour window between midnight and 3 a.m. before the family went to sleep? There are many accounts which say it wasn't uncommon for Penny to have people visiting the house at all hours of the night, and if any of them were an opportunistic predator, they may have felt compelled to show up there to abduct Antoinette. Now, the one thing which really doesn't make much sense is that we have separate stories from Wendy and Sadie about having heard knocks on the front door that night, but Penny never reported hearing anything, even though the 3 kids were supposedly sleeping in the same bedroom with her. Photographs of the Cayadito residence are available online if you search hard enough, and you can see that it's a pretty small house, so it does not seem believable that Penny did not hear these knocks. But then again, if she was drinking heavily or using drugs that night, I guess it's possible that Penny could have passed out and managed to sleep through them. Under normal circumstances, I cannot imagine a 9-year-old girl answering the door in the middle of the night without at least waking her mother up. But if Antoinette was someone who was often forced to take the reins by taking care of the household, and it was not uncommon for people to show up there at odd hours, then perhaps this was nothing unusual for her. But of course, who knows if this knocking on the door story is even true? The Unsolved Mystery segment only mentions the account from Wendy, so when I started researching the case, it took me by complete surprise to learn that the other sister, Sadie, had also reported hearing knocks on the front door during the early stages of the investigation. To recap, Sadie's story is that she and Antoinette were both awakened by the knocks on 2 separate occasions. The first time, Sadie witnessed Antoinette go to the front door, but she would not open it because she did not recognize the people outside. But the second time, Sadie fell asleep after Antoinette left the bedroom, so she has no idea if anything happened. If Wendy's story is true, then this implies that she could have followed Antoinette when she went to answer the door the second time around and wound up witnessing her abduction. When looking through some of the original newspaper articles, it was also surprising to read that Sadie recalled hearing a man and woman's voice identifying themselves as an aunt and uncle outside the front door. This would seem to corroborate Wendy's story about someone convincing Antoinette to open the door by claiming to be her Uncle Joe, but the problem is that Wendy claimed she saw her sister being abducted by 2 men. She never reported seeing a woman, even though Sadie claimed she heard a woman's voice. It's always been theorized that if Wendy's story was true, the abductors could have been people with knowledge of the family who believed that pretending to be Uncle Joe might convince Antoinette to unlock the door. However, according to Sadie, the reason Antoinette did not open the door the first time after the first series of knocks was because she did not recognize the man standing outside. So even if someone told her he was Uncle Joe, would she have not have looked out the window to make sure? But I guess it's possible that Uncle Joe was such a trusted figure that Antoinette might have opened the door for him without hesitation. We don't have too many details about Uncle Joe, but after looking into his alibi, it seems like investigators were pretty certain he could not have been at the Caidito residence that night. If this was a ruse, and Antoinette's disappearance was a planned abduction, knocking on her front door in the middle of the night seems like an odd way to carry it out. How could the perpetrator have been certain that Antoinette, and not her mother, would even answer the door at such an odd hour? Petty always maintained that she locked the front door and latched the screen door when she arrived home that night, but found them unlocked and unlatched when she woke up. There were no signs of forced entry, so if Penny's telling the truth, then this implies that someone willingly opened those doors at some point during the night. In addition, while Wendy said she saw Antoinette's abductors force her into a brown van, we have the account from the neighbor who said they saw a brown truck parked in front of the residence between 6:30 and 7 a.m. and a man approaching the house. I mean, it's possible this sighting from the neighbor has no significance at all, but an alternate scenario is that Antoinette could have woken up on her own before 7 a.m. and unlocked the front door, and this man could have used this opportunity to abduct her before the rest of the family woke up. Now, obviously, if you compare the two stories, Sadie's account would seem to be the more believable one, since she reported it immediately, while Wendy waited 5 years. When Wendy was interviewed by the Albuquerque Journal in 2016, she addressed this whole situation rather ambiguously by stating, quote, "I remember the police asking me what happened, and I had thought then that it was one of our uncles at the door. That turned out not to be true. Really? I'm not sure what happened to her," end quote. So does this mean that Wendy has discounted the idea of Uncle Joe being at the front door that night? Or does she now believe this abduction never happened at all? One theory which has been pushed forward is that if Penny was complicit in Antoinette's disappearance, she could have coached Wendy into fabricating a false story about witnessing an abduction by two men in order to divert suspicion away from her. Well, if this had been some pre-planned interview in which Penny accompanied her daughter to the police station, I could see her providing Wendy with instructions about what to say. But the problem is that Wendy first shared this story when Detective Escobel and FBI agent Kevin Miles just showed up at her schoolyard one day and decided to speak with her. As far as I can tell, there's no indication that this interview was pre-planned or that Penny or Wendy had any prior knowledge this was going to happen. This occurred shortly after the reported sighting of Antoinette in Nevada, and it sounds like investigators just made the spontaneous decision to take a fresh look at the case by re-interviewing family members. I don't think they had any inkling that Wendy would suddenly share this new story. If the abduction actually happened, there are any number of reasons why Wendy elected to stay silent for so long. Remember, she was only 5 years old at the time, so it's possible she was left so traumatized by the experience that she was unable to truly register what happened or speak about it. To make a comparison, Elizabeth Smart's 9-year-old sister was woken up when Elizabeth was abducted by her bedroom by an intruder, but she pretended to be asleep while this happened. The whole thing left her so shaken that she stayed in bed for over 2 hours before she finally woke up her parents to tell them what happened. Given her young age at the time, I guess it's possible that Wendy's recollection of this incident might have been nothing more than a vivid dream or a false memory. Whatever the case, I'm sure that Wendy did genuinely believe it was real at some point, since it sounds like the guilt over not having said anything sooner played a huge role in her substance abuse issues. But if Wendy had been pushed to lie by her mother, or had any inside knowledge about Penny's complicity in Antoinette's disappearance, then I don't see any reason for her to keep remaining silent about it after all these years, since Penny is no longer with us. No one has ever been named as a suspect or person of interest in this case, and I suppose the closest we've ever come to a potential suspect was Wesley Daniels, the elderly man who was charged with sexually abusing 4 other local children 2 months after Antoinette went missing. But since all of Daniels' other victims were boys, I'm not sure he would have targeted Antoinette, and it doesn't sound like it was his MO to abduct children from their homes in the middle of the night. So we'll now explore the two pieces of evidence which led to speculation that Antoinette might have still been alive in the years following her disappearance. The 1987 phone call from a girl claiming to be her, and the reported sighting of her in the diner in Carson City in 1991. For both of these situations, you find yourself thinking that even if they have nothing to do with Antoinette's case, they must have some sort of interesting backstory. I mean, there has been speculation that the phone call might have been some sort of hoax or prank, especially since it took place only 6 days after the one-year anniversary of Antoinette's disappearance. But if the girl in that recording was not Antoinette, she still sounds genuinely terrified, so she must have been one hell of an actress if the call was a hoax. Now, one of the main reasons there has been skepticism about this call is that the girl specifically said she was in Albuquerque, but the call came into the Gallup Police Department, which is around 140 miles away. Whenever you see an online discussion about this aspect of the case, you'll always see this question asked. If Antoinette was being held captive, why wouldn't she have called 911? Well, the fact of the matter is that back in 1987, only 50% of the United States had access to 911, and while I can't say with absolute certainty whether Gallup, New Mexico was part of that 50%, I think it's possible that Antoinette might have grown up never having used 911 at all, or even knowing what it was. This is strictly my own personal experience, but growing up as a child in Canada during the 1980s, I remember not learning about 911 until later in the decade, and always having a list of emergency numbers, including the police department, near our home phone. Granted, it might seem far-fetched that Antoinette would have known the phone number for the Gallup Police Department, and still remembered it, 1 year after she was abducted and taken to Albuquerque. But in spite of her young age, Antoinette was given a lot of responsibilities in regards to taking care of her siblings. If she had been taught to call the Gallup Police Department whenever there was an emergency, it's possible she could have memorized their number and dialed it when she got access to a phone. Another key point which was mentioned in one of the original newspaper articles is that the Cayudito residents did not have a phone at the time Antoinette went missing, and Penny only decided to install one afterwards in case someone attempted to call her with information about the case. If Antoinette was raised without a phone in her house, then this might go against the idea of her knowing the police department's number, but on the other hand, it also explains why she wouldn't have attempted to call her family if she was being held captive. I mentioned earlier that even though the entire call lasted 40 seconds, only about 20 seconds of the audio were played on Unsolved Mysteries, and in another portion of the call, you can apparently hear the voice of an additional person in the background who sounds like they might be an elderly person. I'm sure the authorities likely had their reasons for withholding a portion of the call from the public, but after all these years, I'm surprised they've never released the entire thing. While investigators were inclined to believe that the voice of the person who yelled, "Who said you could use the phone?" was male, I've seen people say during online discussions about this case that they believe it actually sounds female, but the audio really isn't clear enough to say with absolute certainty. I think this might be because a theory has circulated that if Penny was complicit in Antoinette's disappearance, she could have staged the call and gotten another child, possibly one of her other daughters, to pretend to be Antoinette. If something like this happened today, we would be able to determine instantly if the call actually originated from Albuquerque, but back in 1987, the Gallup Police Department didn't have that sort of technology, so we have no idea where it came from. While Penny said she was certain that the girl's voice was Antoinette's, she could have said this to keep up her hopes that her daughter was still alive somewhere, or possibly to push forward the false narrative that she was the victim of a stranger abduction. I don't know. The idea of Penny personally staging the call seems incredibly risky and far-fetched to me, and if she did coerce another child into pretending to be Antoinette on the phone, it seems surprising that they would have been able to remain silent about this after all these years. It's certainly possible that the call was nothing more than a mean-spirited prank from an outside party, and if so, that girl certainly did a convincing job at sounding frightened. Now, I'm far less convinced by the sighting of Antoinette, which took place in Carson City, Nevada. I frequently mentioned how unreliable eyewitness sightings can be in cases like this, as it's fairly common for Good Samaritans to mistake people they've seen in public for missing persons. What's particularly problematic here is that 5 years had passed, so the eyewitness was basing her identification on some age-enhanced photographs which show what Antoinette might look like at age 14. So I definitely would not be surprised if this waitress saw some other teenage girl and mistook her for Antoinette based on those photos. Now, if Antoinette had been held captive for 5 years, you might be wondering why this couple she was seen with would bring her out in public, but this has happened in plenty of other cases involving kidnapped children who were found alive, including Elizabeth Smart. Their captors would often exert such control over them that they felt confident that the victim would be too frightened to try anything if they took them out in public. And that's what's particularly intriguing about this sighting. While I'm skeptical that the girl in the diner was Antoinette, she did write the words "help me" and "call the police" on a napkin before she left. Assuming that the girl or the waitress didn't write this as some sort of prank, you have to wonder what the backstory behind this whole situation was. If this girl was not Antoinette, who was she, and what was the deal with the unkempt couple she was with? Was she another kidnapping victim, and did this couple have some sort of control over her? Truthfully, if it wasn't for that note, I'm not sure this incident would have even been linked to Antoinette's case at all, but it's definitely an intriguing mystery within a mystery. Of course, all this talk about eyewitness sightings and phone calls might be completely irrelevant to the case if Antoinette was not kidnapped at all. What if something happened to her inside her home on the night she disappeared, and her family covered the whole thing up? There are a number of online sleuths who believe this theory, though there's never been any hard evidence to support it. But even if Penny was not directly responsible for Antoinette's disappearance, could she have known more information than she let on? I know that Detective Escabel seemed to think so, though he didn't specifically mention why, aside from the fact that Penny once failed a polygraph. Of course, since polygraphs are unreliable, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it is interesting that the FBI wanted to question Penny on her deathbed, as it seems clear that they might have been expecting her to make some sort of confession. Perhaps all of Penny's substance abuse issues were the result of guilt over something she did, rather than just grief. I do think it's possible that even if Penny had no knowledge or involvement with Antoinette's disappearance, she may have still felt compelled to lie to the authorities about certain things, which could explain her failing the polygraph. For instance, if Penny had been taking drugs at the house on the night Antoinette went missing, I can see why she would not want to reveal this, even if she was innocent, and played no role in what happened to her daughter. Look, I'm not going to pretend that Penny was a model parent, or that there are a number of things about her I don't find suspicious. I definitely get the impression that there are some details the authorities have never released publicly about why they believe Penny and the rest of her family have never revealed the full truth about what really happened. But at the same time, there seems to be so much unverified gossip floating around the internet that I really don't know what to believe. We know that Wendy went public and gave her side of the story 5 years ago, and you get the impression that she does not personally believe her mother was complicit. But I have a feeling that a lot more light might be shed on this story if the remaining sibling, Sadie, decided to speak out someday. We really don't have any details about Sadie's life or her current whereabouts, only that she is estranged from Wendy. Sadie's point of view would be very important, as her story about hearing the knocks on the front door seems to simultaneously corroborate and contradict Wendy's version of events. Does Sadie personally believe that Wendy witnessed Antoinette's abduction? Or could Wendy have concocted the story from bits and pieces of Sadie's account? Since Sadie was only 7 years old at the time these events took place, her memory might not be 100% reliable, but if Antoinette was not the victim of a stranger abduction, then Sadie's account might provide more insight into what actually happened. In addition to Sadie, I would also be interested in learning more about Antoinette's biological father, Larry Estrada. Remember, Larry's own sister went missing 3 years later, but I have not heard anything from him in the media since then, and I have no idea what he is up to today. If he's still alive, I would definitely be curious to know what his thoughts on this case are after all these years. Overall, there are just way too many unanswered questions to get a handle on what happened here. Regardless of whether Antoinette was the victim of a stranger abduction, or if this crime was an inside job concocted by her own family, I don't think the odds are good that she is still alive today. Though I wouldn't discount the possibility that she was alive for a period of time after she went missing. Back when I watched the Unsolved Mysteries segment in 1992, I had no idea what to think what might have happened, but unfortunately, all the new information I've learned about the case during the past 3 decades have only confused the issue even more. So I have a feeling that unless someone comes forward and talks, we may never learn the full truth about Antoinette's disappearance. All that being said, if you happen to have any information about the unsolved disappearance of Antoinette Cayadito, please contact the Gallup Police Department at 505-863-9365. That's 505-863-9365. However, if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We produced a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3, and this past month, I released a fun special episode in which I counted down my top 10 personal favorite acting performances which took place in reenactments on Unsolved Mysteries. And for our patrons in tier 3, I've also recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'd also like to give a shout out to our most recent listener who has signed up with us on Patreon this week, John K. So thank you very much for your support. Also, provided that it becomes safe to travel again, The Trail Went Cold is going to be appearing on Podcast Row at the very first CrimeCon UK, which is being held at the Leonardo Royal Hotel and Spa in London, on the weekend of September the 25th and 26th. If you would like to purchase tickets to the event, we have a special promo code you can use to get a 10% discount. So to receive 10% off, visit crimecon.co.uk and enter the promo code COLE21. That's COLE21. In addition, I wanted to provide another reminder that I hold live streaming sessions on a platform called Get Vocal. Every Thursday night from 7 until 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I host what is essentially an after-show for each week's podcast episode, where I have an interactive discussion about the featured case from said episode, and answer questions and address comments from listeners. I always include a link to these sessions in our show notes, so be sure to check there for more information, or visit getvocal.com. That's GETVOKL.com. I just wanted to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum, and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit, which both have a lot of interesting discussions about this case. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourself a good week, and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. We'll be right back.